come away from there, my dear. You shouldn't concern yourself with such terrible things.
Perhaps you're right, Gaius.
Laura let the curtain fall closed over the window in the hotel lobby. They hadn't gone up to their rooms yet when the shooting erupted down the street, but by the time Laura reached the window, it was all over. Her son, who had been talking to her when the gunplay started, had already rushed out to see what was happening. Brady was alive, she thought as she turned away from the window. He hadn't been in the middle of this battle, but there would be others. She had long since learned to accept the fact that Brady was in a violent, dangerous profession. His life was at risk nearly all the time. That was the way it had to be if they were both going to get what they wanted, and they were so close now. It wasn't like she could strap on a gun, stride into the street, and seize what she desired. Lord knew she would if she could, and there had indeed been times in the past when she had taken direct action. In this world, though, a woman had to work behind the scenes for the most part. She had to find a man to do her bidding and provide her with the things she wanted and needed. Or, in her case, she had to give birth to one. Baldridge put a hand on her elbow and steered her gently across the lobby toward the stairs. The territorial house wasn't fancy. There were rugs on the floor, some comfortable overstuffed armchairs, a writing desk, and a few potted plants, but that was the extent of the amenities in the lobby. The room upstairs would be much the same, Laura knew, comfortably furnished, but on the plain side. A person couldn't expect any more than that in a Montana cow town.
So that was Frank Morgan. I wonder what his real reason was for lying about his identity at first.
I'm sure what he said about his reason was the truth. Frank isn't in the habit of lying.
He lied to us about who he is.
That's true, but I'm sure he thought it was necessary. Frank can be a very practical man in some ways. In others, he's wildly romantic and idealistic.
I don't think I'd care to know the details that prompted that statement.
They reached the landing, and he took her along the corridor to the adjoining room he had gotten for them. He opened one of the doors.
Here we are.
Yes, it was just as she had expected, Laura thought, as they went inside. A sturdy four-poster bed, a wardrobe, a dressing table with a basin and a pitcher on it, a ladder-back chair, and a single blue-curtained window that looked out on the decorative balcony running along the front of the building.
I'll see to it that your bags are brought over from the stage station. We can eat in the dining room downstairs, or I can have something sent up.
It might be better to have something sent up in a while. I really am tired.
Of course. I'm sorry there's been so much trouble since your arrival. This business with Embry is coming to a head. Did you bring any news from our lawyers?
Oh, no. They're still working on the case down in Helena.
Laura managed not to smile at the way Baldridge referred to them as our lawyers. It was her money that paid them, not his. Well, her late husband's money, to be precise. Or it had been. But it was hers now, and it always would be as it continued to grow. Frederick Wilcoxon had been a decent man, a widower in his 60s who had been canny enough and lucky enough to amass a considerable fortune in the railroad business. He had built a number of spur lines across the country, and all of them were quite profitable. But with his wife gone, he was lonely, and when he had met a beautiful society widow who was wealthy in her own right, it hadn't taken much effort at all on Laura's part to get him to fall for her and convince him that it had been his idea, not hers. Of course, she wasn't a widow. She had never been married until she wed Frederick Wilcoxon, in fact. She wasn't a member of society, and she had just enough money to put on a good act. Frederick hadn't discovered any of that during the 6 months they had been married. Then he had died, quite conveniently, in fact, and she hadn't even had to ease him out of his life, although she had considered the idea. She had never actually killed anyone, though, and didn't particularly want to start down that path. That was one reason she had Brady, after all. He was quite good at killing and didn't seem to mind doing it. Laura was sure he would have gotten rid of Frederick if she'd asked him to, but fortunately, her husband's heart had given out one night when he was paying one of his occasional visits to her bedroom in his Denver mansion. Frederick Wilcoxon died happy, and the money and power she inherited from him made Laura happy, so everything had worked out well all around. But there was always more money to be made, more power to be seized. And once she had talked to Frederick's lawyers and business managers about his plans, she had seen that she could carry them out, probably even better than he would have been able to, because Frederick, may he rest in peace, had had scruples. Laura had known for decades just how useless those things were.
You really must be tired. You look like your mind is a million miles away.
I'm sorry, darling. I think I'll rest for a bit. Then if you want to have some dinner sent up, we can eat together.
I'd like that very much.
Baldridge had taken off his hat. Now he settled it back on his head, and Laura thought, not for the first time, that he really was a handsome, distinguished-looking man. Not at all the sort you'd expect to be a Montana cattle baron who had spent years fighting Indians and outlaws. Gaius Baldridge had a certain class about him that he clung to stubbornly, refusing to allow the rude lifestyle of the frontier to take it away from him. But now, he had met his match. He just didn't know it yet. Baldridge left the room. Laura didn't know if he went downstairs or to the adjoining room. She made sure the corridor door and the door between the rooms were locked, then loosened the collar and top button of her traveling gown, and stretched out on the bed. Although she often used tiredness as an excuse when she didn't want to do something, she really was weary after the stagecoach journey from Great Falls. It would be so much easier once the railroad came through here, and she was the one who was going to make that happen.
Who is it?
Me.
Recognizing her son's voice, Laura turned the key in the lock and opened the door. Brady looked furious as he came into the room.
Where have you been? I saw Frank leave town with those other men a while ago, so I expected you back sooner.
I had to take one of my men to the doctor's office. Morgan busted his shoulder with a bullet, but at least he'll live. The others are dead. Then that damn marshal cornered me and started reading me the riot act again. Would have been easy to put a bullet in his ugly face. It was mighty damn tempting, too.
We're not going to kill any lawmen unless we have to. I have work to do here, and having my son be a wanted murderer would make it a lot more difficult.
Well, I wouldn't want to do anything that would interfere with your business.
Don't forget that my business is about to make us rich.
You're already rich.
It'll make us very rich. Once we bring the railroad through to those miners in the mountains northwest of here, there's no limits to the profits we can make.
I don't care that much about the money.
You are certainly your father's son. Frank never cared that much about money either.
Did you know he was going to be here? Did you?
Brady, I swear to you, I had no idea Frank Morgan was anywhere in this part of the country. When I stepped off that stagecoach this morning and saw him standing across the street, it was a complete surprise to me.
I guess we just got lucky.
I'm not sure it's all that lucky. He seems to be on the opposite side. And Frank Morgan is a formidable enemy, Brady. Never forget that.
You'll just work your magic on him and bring him over to our side.
I don't know if that's going to be possible.
Then I'll kill him if he gets in our way. It's what he deserves anyway for what he did to you.
Laura stepped closer to her son, lifted a hand, and rested it lightly against his cheek.
Sooner or later, Frank Morgan will get what's coming to him.
It was late in the afternoon before Frank, Salty, Hal, and Carlin reached the headquarters of the Boxed E. Jubal stalked across the yard to the barn as Frank and the others led their mounts inside.
Took you long enough to deliver a couple of corpses.
Oh, we stopped for dinner at the feed barn, and then, well...
What is it, Dad? Blast it! I can tell something happened. None of you seem to have any bullet holes in you anyway.
Yeah, but the same thing can't be said of the other hombres.
Damn it! There was another shooting!
Brady Morgan and four of his men rode in while we were in town, and they found out what happened to the two who tried to attack Faye.
Tell me one of you killed Brady. Please tell me.
He stayed out of it this time. But three of the other men are dead, and the other one is wounded bad enough he won't be doing any gunfighting for a long time, if he ever does again.
Well, that's three more the buzzard's gone under. I'll bet you did for most of them.
I don't keep count. Killing's never been anything I'm proud of.
That ain't all. Brady's ma's in town. She come in on the stage and old Gaius Baldridge met her. Looked to me like he's sweet on her. Sorry, Frank.
Don't worry about it. Whatever was between Laura and me was over a long time ago. More than 20 years ago.
So, Baldridge is mixed up with this lady who's Brady Morgan's ma. and you are the boy's pa, and you still claim you're on our side.
It's not just a claim. I am on your side, Mr. Embry. I've thrown in with you, and I'll stick. So will Salty.
Life sure can't get in a tangle, can it?
You can say that again.
Faye Embry emerged from her room for supper that night and seemed to be back to her usual self, which didn't surprise Gage Carlin, according to what the cowboy had told Frank and Salty in the bunkhouse after the meal.
Figured she'd bounce back pretty quick. I've been riding for the Box D ever since she was a little girl, and she's always been full of fire. Never bothered her a bit standing up to her pa and her big brother. Maybe I'm a mite out of line for saying so, but I don't think Ms. Embry ever knew quite what to make of her.
I'm just glad she's gotten over being shaken up by what happened.
Miss Faye went round and round with her folks and Hal when she got it in her head that her and Bill Kitson were sweet on each other. Boss said there was no way his daughter was going to take up with some 40 a month and found cowpoke. Miss Faye was so mad about the whole thing, I halfway expected her and Bill to run off to Great Falls together and get hitched, just to spite the old man. But she changed her mind, and that was the end of that. You can't force Miss Faye to change her way of thinking, but once she does it on her own, she won't budge any more than a mountain does.
Frank listened to the story with interest. It might be nothing more than idle gossip, but he had learned over the years that it was best to know as much as he could about whatever situation you found yourself in. The next morning, when Hal came out of the ranch house, his father was with him. Jubal Embry was dressed for riding, and as Frank saw the cattleman approaching the corral, he guessed that Embry planned to attend the inquest, too. That wasn't all Embry had in mind. He gathered up a dozen ranch hands.
Saddle up! We're all going to Pine Knob this morning.
I knew you were coming along, Pa, but you didn't tell me you figured on taking most of the crew with us.
Baldridge's bunch of gun throwers are all liable to be in town. I ain't taking any chances. They might be planning to bushwhack the four of you when you show up for that sham of an inquest.
That doesn't seem very likely to me, Mr. Embry. Baldridge acts like he wants to keep the peace in town.
No man who hires a bunch of cold-blooded killers wants to keep the peace. Sooner or later, things will bust wide open.
This is a bad idea, Pa. It'll make it seem like you're looking for trouble. Now, I agree with Frank. Brady Morgan won't try anything in front of the marshal, the coroner, and everybody else in town who shows up for the inquest.
Didn't you hear me? Get your horses, dammit. We're going to town.
When the group reached Pine Knob, Frank noticed quite a few horses tied at the hitch racks in front of Corrigan's casino. Even the popular saloon, which usually wasn't, seemed to be doing a brisk business today despite the fact that the hour wasn't noon yet. With that many men in town, Frank thought there was a good chance Embry had been right about Brady and the others coming to attend the inquest.
Where will they hold this thing?
At the town hall. It's the only place big enough except for the saloons. And Judge Woodville is a teetotaler. He doesn't even like to be around when they serve liquor.
Woodville's the local magistrate?
That's right. The deputy coroner, too. He was appointed the job so the real coroner wouldn't have to come all the way up here every time there was a killing.
Yeah. In this part of the country, a fella be on the road all the time just trying to keep up with the dead man.
Well, that's the way it used to be. But things have settled down quite a bit in recent years, according to Pa. At least, you know, they hadn't until here lately.
Jubal Embry drew rein in front of a large wooden building with a high front porch. Some of the townspeople were already waiting there, eager to sit in on the proceedings and enjoy a break from their everyday routines, even though the cause of it was the deaths of three men. The riders from the Box D dismounted and spread out to tie their horses at hitch racks in front of the town hall and the adjacent buildings. As Frank was looping Goldie's reins around the rail, Salty nudged him in the side.
Baldridge has come out of the hotel, and the lady's with him.
Frank looked up and saw Baldridge and Laura walking arm in arm toward the town hall. They seemed mighty companionable, and Laura looked as pretty as ever in a green dress and hat this morning. No matter what was going on around her, she always looked cool and unruffled. She had been that way back in San Antonio, and the years since hadn't changed her.
I reckon they're planning on attending the inquest, too. Baldridge has got a right to be there. Those three men worked for him. He was in town when it happened, too.
Since Frank, Salty, Hal, and Gage Carlin had the most riding on the outcome of these proceedings, the rest of the group from the Box D moved aside for them. With the exception of Jubal Embry, who clenched a fist and pounded on the locked door of the town hall.
Open up in there. Let's get this damn thing started.
Take it easy, Pa. There's no point in putting a burr under the judge's saddle before he even calls the inquest to order.
This is all a waste of time. Any son of a buck who rides for Gaius Baldridge deserves to be shot.
I don't believe you'll find that written anywhere in the statutes, Jubal.
The crowd had parted again to let Baldridge and Laura approach the hall's front door. Embry glared at his longtime rival, but Baldridge just regarded Embry levelly with a cold-eyed stare.
Good morning, Frank.
Hello, Laura. I hope you're not feeling as tired today.
No, I've been able to rest, and I feel much better now.
Before the crowd could press forward into the hall, Marshal Roy Trask stepped onto the porch. The double-barreled shotgun in his hands made people step back instead.
The judge will be calling the inquest to order soon, but before he does, I got something to say. The town council got together early this morning and passed a new ordinance. From now on, no guns are allowed inside the town hall.
You don't have the authority to do that!
You weren't paying attention, Jubal. I'm not doing it. The town council is. And since the town hall belongs to Pine Knob and those gents run things around here, I reckon they've got every right in the world to say whether or not folks can bring in guns. The answer now is no, they can't.
From the corner of Frank's eye, he spotted movement from the western end of town. Brady Morgan and a number of other men had emerged from the saloons and were swinging up in their saddles. They turned their mounts and trotted toward the town hall.
What about Brady and his bunch? Does the same rule apply to them?
Applies to everybody, no exceptions.
In that case, I suggest we abide by it. But I'd leave half your men out here if I was you.
That's what I was thinking.
Embry pointed out half of the men he'd brought with him.
You fellas take your guns off. You're coming inside with me. The rest of you, stay out here.
Put your gun belts in the back of that wagon over there. I parked it there for just that reason.
Reluctantly, the men who had been picked to be disarmed unbuckled the gun belts and placed them in the back of the wagon Trask had pointed out. Frank, Salty, Hal, and Carlin did likewise.
You too, Jubal, if you're going in.
I didn't figure the rule applied to me.
No exceptions. Take off that smoke pole or stay out here with the rest of your boys.
All right, blast it, but I don't like it.
Trask didn't have to explain the new ordinance to Brady Morgan and the other gunmen.
Excuse me, my dear.
Baldridge walked out into the street to intercept Brady. He spoke in low tones as Frank watched. Frank saw the flash of anger in Brady's eyes, but Baldridge was insistent. After a moment, six men dismounted, including Brady, and started removing their guns to place them in the wagon. The delegations were going to be the same size, Frank thought, then amended that slightly. The Box D would actually have superior numbers. Once you counted him, Salty, Hal, and Carlin, Embry and Baldridge counted each other. And Frank still wasn't sure exactly how Laura figured in all of this.
All right. Anybody who's not carrying a gun can go on inside. And just as soon as we can, we'll get this inquest started.
The crowd filed into the town hall in an orderly fashion, probably because Marshal Trask was standing beside the door glaring and holding the shotgun. Nobody in his right mind was going to argue with a greener. The chairs in the hall were arranged in two sections with an aisle between them. When Baldridge, with Laura on his arm, took a seat on the front row of the section to the left, Brady Morgan and his men followed suit, filling the first two rows of that section. Embry and the men from the Box D went to the right. Six chairs stood by themselves along the right-hand wall at the front of the room. The jury would sit there, Frank knew. A table for the judge, with a chair at the end of it for witnesses, faced the audience. A small man with wispy white hair and a round, unlined face, so he looked like a cross between a baby and an old man, emerged from a room at the hall's rear and came to the table. He wore a black suit and string tie.
Everybody settle down! All rise!
People started to get up. The judge waved them back into their seats.
This is an inquest, not a trial. We don't have to be too formal. Come to order.
The spectators all settled back in their seats.
Madam.
The judge's gaze landed on Laura and stayed there.
You appear to be the only lady in attendance today. Some of the details in the matter at hand may be quite unpleasant. Are you sure you wouldn't prefer to withdraw in order to protect your feminine sensibilities?
With all due respect, Your Honor, my sensibilities are quite sturdy, even though they are feminine. So I'll decline your kind offer, though I do so appreciate your chivalrous consideration.
As you wish, ma'am. We are here to render a verdict as to the cause of death of three individuals, and the appropriateness of the same. For that, a jury of six good men and true is required.
The judge picked up the gavel, used it to point out half a dozen townsmen among the spectators.
Line up here in front of me while I question you as to your suitability for this panel.
The questioning was quick and simple. None of the men Woodville had selected worked for or had any connection with either Jubal Embry or Gaius Baldridge, or so they claimed. Frank supposed it was possible some or even all of them leaned one way or the other. It was almost impossible not to in a small town like Pine Knob. One by one, the judge waved the men into the chairs along the wall. When the jury was seated, he went on.
As I said, this is a legal proceeding, but not a trial. There will be no opening or closing statements. I will call witnesses and ask questions, and then the jury will render its verdict. As the first witness, I call Hal Embry.
Looking slightly uncomfortable, Hal stood up, set the hat he had been holding in his lap on his chair, and went to the table where Woodville swore him in.
Tell me, in your own words, what happened yesterday morning in front of the Feed Barn Cafe, Mr. Embry.
Well, sir, Your Honor, we brought in a couple of dead men and delivered them to Mr. Omar Finnegan's undertaking parlor.
Who are these dead men to whom you refer?
I believe their names were Royal and Dobbs.
What do you mean when you say we?
Well, there was me, Gage Carlin, one of the hands from the Box D, and Frank Morgan and Salty Stevens.
Do Mr. Morgan and Mr. Stevens work for the Box D as well?
Oh, that's sort of hard to say, Your Honor. They're staying at the ranch and riding with us, but I can't say my pa has actually hired them.
So they're visitors?
I reckon you could say that.
Go ahead.
For the next several minutes, Hal ran through the story with the judge stopping him from time to time to ask a question. Frank watched Brady while the testimony was going on, and he could see that his son was seething with anger inside. Other than his skill with a colt, the gunman's pride was really the only thing he had, and when that was challenged, it was very difficult not to respond with hot lead.
Do you have anything else to add?
No, Your Honor. That's all I remember about what happened.
Very well. Step down. Gage Carlin, please step forward and be sworn.
When Carlin was seated in the witness chair, the judge began.
Do you have anything to add to Mr. Embry's testimony, Mr. Carlin?
No, sir, Your Honor. Hal told you what happened, and that was the straight truth of it.
All right, step down, please. Call Frank Morgan to the stand.
Frank rose slowly to his feet. He had been in court before, and even though Judge Woodville had said a couple of times that this wasn't a trial, it sure felt like one.
Mr. Morgan, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please be seated and tell me, do you have anything to add to Mr. Embry's testimony?
I don't, Your Honor. That's the way it happened.
Very well.
Frank started to get to his feet, grateful that it was over so quickly.
Wait just a moment, Mr. Morgan. I have another question or two for you. Is it true that you're also known as the Drifter?
Some folks call me that. It's not a name I gave myself.
Are you a gunfighter?
Well, I think I like Drifter better, Your Honor.
But you have killed a number of men in gun duels.
Yes, sir, I have. More than I like to think about.
Were you hired to come to this valley?
No, sir, I was not. I didn't even know there was trouble in this valley until Salty and I got here.
All right, that's all. Step down.
Frank did so, gladly.
I'm going to call Marshal Trask to testify now.
Frank sat down by Salty again.
He didn't ask me any questions. How come?
I guess he figured he has the facts established.
I think he just don't want nobody as dignified as me sitting up there next to him. He's afraid I'll steal his legal thunder.
That's probably it.
Trask was sworn in.
In the interest of simplicity and efficiency, Marshal, let me ask you if you questioned any witnesses to the events of yesterday morning.
I did, Your Honor. I talked to at least a dozen townspeople, including Katie Storm and her Uncle Solomon, who saw the whole thing from inside the cafe. Miss Storm even has a cut on her hand from flying glass to show for it.
And did these witnesses tell you anything that substantially differed from the testimony of Mr. Embry, Mr. Carlin, and Mr. Morgan?
No, Your Honor, they didn't. Everybody I talked to backed up their story.
Since this isn't a trial, I'm going to ask you for an opinion, Marshal. Do you believe those men are telling the truth?
Yes, sir, I do.
Thank you, Marshal. That's all.
As Trask left the witness chair and walked to the back of the room again, Woodville turned to the jury.
You've heard the testimony, gentlemen, so now I'll ask you to confer and render a verdict in the deaths of Carl Peavy, Jed Wallace, and Lester Chapman.
Wait just a blasted minute!
Brady Morgan shot to his feet. Baldridge jerked around in his chair and shook his head at Brady, who ignored him.
What kind of a trial is this? You haven't called anybody to testify except those killers.
You're Mr. Morgan, too, aren't you?
That's right.
Then sit down, Mr. Morgan. This isn't a trial, as I've made perfectly clear.
But it's not fair. You haven't asked me or any of my boys what happened.
Did you witness the events, Mr. Morgan?
No, I was in the hotel.
And I can't very well call Mr. Peavy, Mr. Wallace, or Mr. Chapman to the stand because they're all dead. My understanding is that the only other member of your group who was on hand is now at Dr. Hutchison's house, too seriously wounded to testify. What would you have me do?
Brady opened his mouth to say something else, but Baldridge got to his feet.
My apologies, Your Honor. My employee, Mr. Morgan, is understandably upset. Three of his good friends were killed, and he believes that they haven't received a fair hearing.
There's no way to hear them, Mr. Baldridge. They're dead.
Yes, of course. But you should be aware that this matter is directly related to the legal case concerning the false claim that Jubal Emery filed on the western half of the valley.
False claim? There's nothing false about that claim. The only thing false around here is that snake in the grass, Baldridge, who used to say that he was an honorable man.
By God, I'll have Marshal Trask clear this courtroom at the point of a shotgun if I have to.
Judge Woodville turned to the jury.
What's your verdict?
We already talked about it, Your Honor. Self-defense!
Verdict so render, we're adjourned. Take it outside.
Both sides turned toward the door at the same time, and Frank figured there would be a logjam there. That could lead to trouble in a hurry if Brady and his men found themselves at close quarters with the boxed E-hands. Marshal Trask was prepared for just such a thing. When he stepped down from the witness chair, he had moved quickly to the door and posted himself there with the shotgun.
Settle down! Box D goes out first. Baldridge, keep your men where they are.
Very well, Marshal. We shall remain patient for now.
Move your men out, Jubal.
Let's go.
Frank, can I talk to you for a minute?
Baldridge didn't look too happy about that at all.
Sure. Go on outside with Embry's bunch, Salty. I'll be there in a minute.
Be careful, Frank.
By the time Frank reached Laura's side, holding his Stetson in his left hand out of habit, even though he wasn't wearing a gun, all the Box D men were outside. Brady and his men began to follow them. Laura turned to Baldridge.
I'll be just a moment, Gaius. I'm sure you understand.
Of course.
What can I do for you, Laura? Or should I call you Mrs. Wilcoxon?
I don't think there's any need for formality between us. Not when we're such old friends. And that's what I wanted to talk to you about.
Go ahead.
I wanted to make sure that just because you appear to have befriended those people from the Boxed E, that that's not going to cause any hard feelings between you and me.
Why would it do that?
Well, I am visiting with Gaius, and there's no denying the hostility that exists between the two ranches. So, even though Gaius is just a friend...
Is that all he is? I got the feeling it's more than that. At least, he thinks it is.
I'm not responsible for what Gaius thinks. I'm acquainted with him because my late husband had some potential business dealings lined up with him. That's all. When Gaius asked me to come here and see his ranch, I thought it would be polite to do so.
As well as good business.
I am just a poor woman struggling to make sense of everything that's been dumped into my lap, Frank. I can't afford to burn any bridges.
I don't hold any grudges against you because you're friends with Baldridge.
Well, I hope you don't hold any grudges against me at all. I'm sorry about what happened with Brady, Frank. I see now that I was wrong not to find you and tell you about him. I denied you the chance to know your son. And perhaps more importantly, I denied your son the chance to know his father.
You did what you thought was best. I can't fault you for that.
Fate has a way of working things out, don't you think? Even though sometimes it takes a long time, maybe even years. But now we've come together again, Frank. You and I can mend all those old fences. And more importantly, you and Brady finally have a chance to get to know each other.
That's not very likely. Not with Brady working for Baldridge and Salty and me thrown in with the Box D.
But Frank, you said yourself that you didn't know any of these people until you rode into the valley a few days ago. There's no reason you have to take Embry's side in this. For all you know, he's in the wrong, and his claim on the western half of the valley is fraudulent.
He seems like an honest man to me.
Perhaps he is. Perhaps he's well-intentioned. That doesn't mean he's not wrong anyway. And I can tell you, without a doubt, that Gaius Baldridge is an honest, honorable man. A true pioneer in this part of the country.
Some of those men Baldridge has hired are nothing but professional killers.
I've heard the same thing said about you many times, Frank. Whether you ever wanted it or not, you have the same sort of reputation that Brady is starting to acquire. Are you saying that you're better than him?
I'm saying that I'm not going to abandon Embry and the Box D and come over to Baldridge's side. I figured out pretty quick that's what you were after with this conversation.
Frank, you have this all wrong.
I don't think so. You believe that if Baldridge had both me and Brady on his side, there's no way the Box D could win. Baldridge would get what he wants. And so would you. Although I'm not sure yet exactly what that is.
I wanted you to get to know your son. And I thought maybe you and I could recapture something we lost a long time ago. Something we should never have let get away from us. That's all.
Well, if that's true, I'm sorry. But I'm sticking with Embry.
I'm sorry, too. I think you're making a big mistake.
Frank expected to hear shots ring out at any second, but by the time he reached the porch, there hadn't been any gunfire. There was plenty of trouble, though. A big knot of men slugging and punching at each other filled the street in front of the town hall. It was a full-fledged brawl between the ranch hands from the Box D and Baldridge's crew of gunmen.
Oh, they're going to kill each other if somebody doesn't stop them. Help!
Not likely as long as nobody goes for a gun.
Frank glanced along the street. Marshal Trask was nowhere in sight, and neither was the wagon where all the guns had been placed. Frank spotted the vehicle parked in front of the marshal's office.
Stop it! Stop it, I say!
But no one paid any attention to Baldridge. This was more than a fight. It was fast becoming a riot. Jubal Embry was right in the middle of it, despite his age. His hat had been knocked off, and one eye was swelling and darkening, but he continued trading punches with one of the B-Star riders. A few feet away from him, Hal Embry and Gage Carlin were locked up in their own battles with a couple of Baldridge's men. The two sides seemed to be evenly matched as they wailed the tar out of each other. Frank looked for both Salty and Brady, then he found them at the same time. That was because Brady was behind the old-timer with an arm locked around Salty's neck under the jutting white whiskers. A hate-filled grimace twisted Brady's face as he bore down on Salty's throat. The old man's face was turning purple. Brady was going to choke the life out of Salty if somebody didn't stop him. Frank didn't hesitate. He pulled his arm free from Laura's grip, and with a bound, he was off the porch and plunging into the melee. Brady didn't seem to see Frank coming. He was concentrating on choking Salty, and a gleeful expression appeared on his face as the old-timer's struggles grew feeble. Another minute or two, and Salty would be dead, and Brady was eager for that to happen.
Brady!
Brady let go of Salty and flew backwards. Frank slung Brady clear of the battle. Brady fell, rolled over a couple of times, and came to a stop against the town hall porch. Frank didn't pay any attention to him after that. Instead, he moved quickly to the side of Salty, who had collapsed and dropped to a knee next to the old-timer. Sliding an arm around Salty's shoulder, Frank lifted him to a sitting position.
I'm much obliged, Frank. Couldn't get loose from that varmint.
You just take it easy, Salty. You'll be fine.
Yeah, I reckon I will be, thanks to you.
Frank looked over toward the town hall. He saw that Laura had come down from the porch and was kneeling next to her son, heedless of the dust she was getting on her expensive dress. She had Brady's bloody head resting in her lap. He appeared to still be in a stupor. He came out of it, though, with a sudden start. He lurched up into a sitting position. His mouth worked furiously. Frank figured Brady was cursing, although he couldn't hear the words over the uproar around him. There was no doubt about what happened next. Ignoring his mother's clutching hands, Brady levered himself to his feet. As two men were punching at each other real close to him, he reached out and plucked out the gun that rode in one man's holster. Lifting the weapon, he thumbed back the hammer and pointed the gun right at Frank. With blood from his broken nose covering the lower half of his face, Brady strode toward Frank. Men saw the blood and the gun and got out of his way.
Look out, Frank!
Since Salty had recovered a little from almost being choked to death, Frank stood up and moved in front of the old-timer. He regarded Brady with a hard, level stare as the young killer stalked toward him. The fight came to an end around them as men hurried to get out of the way of any flying bullets.
You bastard! You broke my nose!
And you almost killed my friend. I reckon you got what was coming to you.
Oh, to blow your brains out!
I'm unarmed, Brady. You shoot me in cold blood in front of 100 witnesses and you'll hang. Baldridge won't be able to help you, and neither will your mother.
If he shoots you, he won't live to hang, Morgan. My men will gun him down like a wolf he is.
Put the gun down, Brady. This isn't the time or place for you and me to settle things.
It's as good as any. You've been hanging around too long, old man. This is my time now.
Frank sprang forward and lashed out with his left arm. His forearm came up under Brady's wrist, which caused the gun to jerk toward the sky. At the same time, Frank brought his right fist, lashing up, and hit Brady again. The crowd watched in stunned silence.
Let me through! Let me through!
The men got out of Laura's way. She reached Brady and dropped to her knees at his side. For the second time in a matter of minutes, she lifted his head into her lap. This time, though, she lifted her head and fixed cold, angry eyes on Frank.
I hope you're happy. Beating your own son to within an inch of his life? You should be proud of yourself, Frank.
What was I supposed to do? Stand there and let him choke my friend to death? Tell him to go ahead and shoot me? That it was all right?
Go to hell!
Marshal Trask broke into the tense scene by striding up.
Break it up! Break it up! Next man who throws a punch will spend a month in jail! Clear the street! Clear the street!
You're about 10 minutes too late, Marshal. Where were you when all this ruckus broke out?
Where I was is none of your business, old man. Clear the street, I said. I'll arrest anybody I see out here 10 minutes from now.
Boxty, with me!
Jubal stomped off toward the feed barn. Hal and Gage Carlin and the other men followed him. Baldridge stepped up to Laura and Brady.
Let me help you with him, my dear.
He bent to take hold of one of Brady's arms. Laura got on her son's other side, and between them, they lifted Brady to his feet. Baldridge used his free hand to motion curtly to some of the other hired guns from the B-Star.
Take him to the doctor's office. That nose will need medical attention. Then put him on his horse, and all of you go back to the ranch. Stay there until I tell you otherwise.
Two men stepped forward, slung Brady's arms over their shoulders, and half carried him down the street toward Dr. Hutchison's place. The rest followed, with plenty of snake-eyed stares directed toward the Box D crew along the way.
I think we should have the horse hitched to the buggy so we can go on out to the ranch as well.
I believe you're right, guys. There's nothing here in town for me.
Baldridge put his arm around her and led her away. As they walked off, Salty stepped up beside Frank, still rubbing his abused throat.
You had any hopes of patching things up with that gal, Frank? I reckon they're pretty much done for now.
That was never my plan. I hoped we could be friends, but that's all.
Hard to believe any son of yours could turn out to be so low-down, mean, and rotten.
Yeah, it is. Let's go on over to the feed barn with the others.
Yeah, coffee might help this poor old throat of mine.
Still alert for an attack, they walked over to the cafe and went inside. The place was crowded with the extra customers from the Box D, and Katie Storm was busy behind the counter pouring coffee and placing plates full of food in front of the men on the stools. One of those men was Hal Embry. He looked like he wanted to talk to Katie, but the way she was bustling around, he had no chance to do so. Solomon Storm was doing more than cooking right now. He went back and forth from the kitchen in his stained white apron, carrying plates of food that he delivered in surly fashion to the tables. None of the men seemed to mind Solomon's less than friendly demeanor. They were used to it, and they were hungry as well, so they dug into the food.
Dang, this place is full up.
Morgan, come on over here.
There's two empty chairs at Embry's table. Let's go.
They joined Embry, Gage Carlin, Bill Kitson, and another of the Box D hands Frank didn't know.
I reckon maybe I was wrong about you and this old pelican, Morgan.
Old pelican, is it?
What do you mean about being wrong?
I mean I had you pegged as a hired killer at best, or a spy for Baldridge at worst. I ain't sure about the hired killer part, but if you're really working for Baldridge, you're playing the deepest game I ever did see. The way you busted Brady Morgan's nose, it looked like the two of you just plumb don't get along. and it damn sure looked like he wanted to kill you. Came pretty wolf gone close, I'd say. If that was an act, it was a mighty good one.
It wasn't an act. He came close to pulling the trigger as soon as he pointed that gun at me.
If he had, there would have been a hell of a lot more blood spilled out there in the street.
That's why I'm glad he didn't. As for me being a hired gun or a regulator, whatever you want to call it, I'm not, Embry. I've told you that before.
So I can't pay you to get rid of Brady and the others?
No. I'll ride for you, though, and back your play against Baldridge. I just won't take money to do it.
Why risk your life to help us, then?
Because I think you're in the right.
I remember when a lot more people felt that way about things. It's a shame more of them don't these days.
Solomon came up to the table with plates of fried chicken, potatoes, and greens.
Here.
We didn't even tell you what we wanted yet.
You eat what I give you and like it.
Solomon turned and stalked off.
I like that old fella. He's the only man I know who's more cantankerous than I am. I'm glad to have your help, Morgan. Can't be easy for you being on the opposite side from your boy like that. Those two punches you landed on him were real honeys, though.
From what I've seen of Brady Morgan, I'm not sure I'd want to claim him. I know that's a harsh thing to say, but he came mighty close to killing Salty.
That's the truth. I reckon it's going to take a few glasses of tonsil varnish later on before my throat stops hurting.
Once we're finished with dinner, we'll head down to one of the saloons. I'm buying.
They all ate for the next few minutes, then Marshal Trask came into the feed barn.
Baldridge and his men are all gone. I watched him ride out of town with my own eyes. When you're done here, you can come down to my office and reclaim your guns. Once you've done that, I expect you to clear out as well.
We got a right to be here.
Leave it be, Jubal. After this morning, the town could use a little peace and quiet and chance to catch its breath. We've known each other a long time, and I'm asking you as a favor to go back to the Box D.
All right. Stevens, I'll buy you those drinks some other time.
I'll hold you to that.
Hal finally got a chance to lean over the counter and talk briefly with Katie, Frank noted as he finished his meal. He couldn't tell what was being said between them, of course, but the conversation, though brief, seemed like a pleasant one. When everybody from the Box D had finished eating, they left the feed barn and walked up the street to the marshal's office. Trask was sitting in a ladder-back chair on the porch with a shotgun across his knees. He nodded toward the wagon.
All right, you can get your guns and then head back to the ranch.
When Salty had strapped down his gun belt, he slapped the heavy pistol on his hip.
Sure does feel good to have this old hog leg dragging me down on this side. I've been carrying this iron for so long, I walk slantwise without it.
I know just how you feel.
The white plaster across Brady's broken nose stood out in sharp contrast to his tanned skin. Black circles had appeared around both eyes, giving him a raccoon-like appearance and making his eyes seem to be set even deeper than they really were. He didn't look good at all, Laura thought. However, Brady's appearance was the least of Laura's worries right now. Brady's vanity might be wounded along with his nose, but it was much more important that Frank Morgan was lined up solidly on the side of their enemies. That threatened all of their plans. The buggy rattled along the trail to the B-Star, with Baldridge skillfully handling the reins. Brady rode alongside the vehicle, swaying a little in the saddle. The doctor had given him a little morphine to dull the pain of the broken nose and suggested that it might be a good idea for Brady to stay at the hotel at least until the next day. But Brady had insisted that he was capable of riding, and since his mother and Baldridge were heading back to the ranch, he was coming along too. Laura had never been able to argue successfully with Brady or persuade him to do anything he didn't want to do. She always gave in. He was her son, after all, and she wanted him to be happy. Now the only thing that would really make him happy, she mused, was for him to kill Frank Morgan. And that might not be a bad idea at all. The other hired gunmen were strung out behind the buggy with the ranch wagon that was loaded with Laura's bags bringing up the rear. The two cowboys riding on the wagon had to eat some dust that way, but being actual cowboys instead of gunslingers, they were used to the misery.
I hope the ride isn't too uncomfortable for you. This is a fine buggy, but still, the trail is rather rough in places.
It's nothing to worry about, Gaius. After riding in that terrible stagecoach all the way from Great Falls, this isn't bad at all.
Traveling here will be much easier and better when the railroad comes through. I plan to have my own station near the ranch headquarters, so only a short trip will be required to reach my home. You'll be able to visit with much more ease and comfort. Unless, of course, you've already become a permanent resident of the Beastar by then. We've talked about...
I know what we've talked about. It's still too soon to consider such things seriously.
Of course, my dear. My apologies.
Besides, this has been a very upsetting day. Brady has been injured, and it could have been even worse.
That's true. Anything the young man needs, I'll take care of immediately, of course. Did you hear that, Brady? If there's anything you need, you just let me know.
Bring me Frank Morgan and let me shoot the son of a bitch. Think I'd blow his knees off before I killed him. That way he'd have to come crawling to me to beg for his life.
I'm as eager for the railroad to arrive in the valley as you are, Gaius. I just worry that once it gets here, the line won't be able to go any farther. I don't think Jubal Embry will be very cooperative about letting it cross his land.
It's not his land. You know what the lawyers told us. I will prevail in court, and I very much want the railroad to cross the entire valley.
That's all well and good, but you know how long court cases can take, and lawyers tend to say what they think their clients want to hear. Besides, even if you win, Embry will probably appeal the decision, and that will stretch things out even longer. We run a real risk of having the railroad's financial backers get impatient and decide they can't wait. Men with that sort of money like to keep it working for them all the time.
I thought you were providing most of the funds for the line.
Well, I am, but I can't do it alone. I need help from those other backers, or I can't proceed. I would truly hate to see this entire deal collapse, Gaius.
It won't collapse. It can't collapse. But I don't see what I can do to make things go faster. The legal system has to work at its own pace.
When you first came out here, Gaius, did you depend on the courts to solve all your problems for you?
The courts? When I settled in this valley, there was no courtroom within 200 miles. The only way to solve a problem was for a man to pick up a pistol or a rifle and deal with it himself. No one relied on lawyers in those days.
It was certainly simpler back then, wasn't it?
Simpler and much more effective. When I was a young man, if something stood in my way, I just... What are you saying, Laura?
I'm saying that you're in the right. And even though your body may not be young anymore, Gaius, I know the same fire still burns inside you that burned back then. Anyone who stands in your way is taking his chances, and he deserves whatever happens to him.
My God, you think I should kill Jubal Embry?
I think you should deal with the problem that's facing you in the same way you would have 40 years ago. Some things never change. A man has the obligation to take what's rightfully his.
Yes, yes, I know you're right. But the world has changed.
No, people would like to believe that. They'd like to think that civilization will protect the weak from the strong. But in the end, the strong will always win. Like you, Gaius. You're strong, and you deserve this valley. And you deserve to become a very rich man when the railroad runs from one end to the other of it, and on to the mountains and beyond. That's not all you deserve, Gaius. You deserve something else, too. And you can have it, if you're man enough to seize it.
I don't know.
Are you, Gaius? Are you man enough?
I'm the same man I always was.
That's what I thought.
I'll have to figure out something to do, some way to get what we want.
Talk to Brady when we get back to the ranch. He's good at this sort of thing. We have a little time to plan. We can let him recover some from what happened today. And by waiting, we'll make Embry think that everything has blown over. Then, when we make our move, it'll be that much more effective because it will come as a surprise.
Yes, when we make our move.
You won't regret working with me, Gaius. You have my word on that.
No, of course not. Some people are just destined to rule. Some men are born to be kings and to have beautiful queens at their side.
Frank wasn't too surprised when the next few days passed quietly on the Box T. Brady was probably laid up, recuperating from that busted nose, and Frank didn't figure Baldridge would make a move until Brady had recovered enough to take charge of the attempt. He and Salty and Gage Carlin held an unofficial council of war in a corner of the bunkhouse the evening they returned to the ranch after the inquest. Even though Hal Embry was the foreman, Carlin had been riding for the Box D longer than any of the other hands. He knew the ranch, and he knew the men who worked here. That was why Frank sought his advice.
We need to make sure that nobody's ever riding the range alone. Anytime somebody goes out to do some work, it'd be a good idea if he took two or three other men with him. And at least one of those men needs to be standing guard the whole time, not tending to chores.
Sounds good to me. What about posting guards here at the ranch? If we put a man with a rifle up in the hayloft, he could see for a long way all around.
I don't think Baldridge will order an out-and-out attack on the ranch headquarters, but we can't completely eliminate the possibility. So that's a good idea too, Gage. Better to be too cautious than careless.
You seen those gum bulls, Frank? They're killers, pure and simple. I wouldn't put nothing past them.
They jumped me and Hal and Ike and Bill the other day. They were on Box D range when they did it.
I'm wondering if Brady did that on his own, without orders from Baldridge. He strikes me as the impatient sort. He could have gotten tired of waiting for Baldridge to tell him to make a move. He knew his mother was on her way to Pine Knob. Maybe he wanted things to settle before she got here.
Trying to impress his ma, you mean? He reckoned she'd be proud of him if he killed a bunch of folks?
She wouldn't look at it that way. She'd just be glad he got rid of some obstacles that stood in the way of her getting what she wanted.
No offense, Frank. I mean, I know you were involved with the lady before, but it'd take a hell of a cold-blooded woman to look at the situation like that.
No offense taken, Gage. I know just what you mean. But after seeing some of the things I did in town today, I'm starting to think you're exactly right about what it would take.
Nothing else was said about Laura. They figured out a schedule for guards to be posted there at the ranch headquarters, and Carlin tapped one of the men to go ahead and climb into the hayloft, taking a Winchester with him.
If you see anything that looks threatening, you start making some noise. You'll need to wake the ranch up in a hurry.
The man nodded in understanding and left the bunkhouse carrying a rifle. Nothing happened that night, though, and the same held true for several days. Frank and Salty rode out with groups of punchers who needed to move cattle from one pasture to another and check on other chores around the ranch. They didn't do any work other than watching for trouble that failed to materialize. One evening after supper, Jubal Embry spoke to Frank.
You and Stevens, wait a minute before you go back out to the bunkhouse. I want to talk to you.
Sure. Come on, Salty.
They followed Embry to a large room in the rear of the house that served as the rancher's library and office. Frank was a little surprised to see Fay already waiting there. After the trouble with Royal and Dobbs at the waterfall, Fay had been rather subdued for a few days, even after she resumed taking her meals with everyone else. Today, though, she seemed fully herself again, her eyes sparking with intelligence and stubbornness.
I'm going to town.
Tonight?
Of course not. Tomorrow.
I've been trying to tell her it ain't a good idea. We can protect her a lot better if she stays right here on the ranch, close to the house.
I haven't set foot out of the house in almost a week. I'm going crazy cooped up like this. And there are things I need from the store. I know Mother needs some supplies too, so I'm going to take the wagon to Pine Knob tomorrow.
Your father's right, Miss Embry. You'll be a lot safer here at the ranch. I reckon if you gave Gage Carlin a list of what you and your mother need from the store, he'd be glad to go in and get it. Salty and I could even go with him to make sure there was no trouble.
But that wouldn't get me out of the house. And if you and Mr. Stevens could protect Gage, why can't you come along and protect me?
Carlin can fight back if somebody wants to jump us.
And I can't? I can handle both a pistol and a rifle. My father and Hal taught me. Actually, I think I'm a better shot with a rifle than Hal is.
Frank glanced at Embry, who shrugged with the same sort of helplessness he usually displayed in an argument with his daughter.
That's true. She's a good shot with a long gun.
Shooting at targets and shooting at men are different. It's a bad idea, Miss Embry.
I'm going, and you can't stop me.
No, I reckon I can't. I'm not your pa.
Frank, you told me you'd throw in with me and back my play. I want you to go with Faye to Pine Knob tomorrow. You and Stevens and whoever else you think ought to go along.
It'll be perfectly safe. I'll have a famous gunfighter with me after all.
If that's what you want, Mr. Embry, we'll do it. We'll take along another of the hands. Not Carlin, though. He ought to stay here and keep an eye on things around the ranch.
Fine. Take Bill Kitson.
Frank saw Faye's mouth tighten a little at the mention of Kitson's name. He recalled what Carlin had told him about the brief romance between Faye and Kitson that hadn't gone anywhere. Faye might not like the idea of traveling in close company with a former suitor, but now that she had gotten her way about going to Pine Knob, it didn't appear that she was going to object.
That's all right with me.
It's settled then. You'll tell Kitson?
I'll tell him. Come on, Salty.
They left the house.
That little girl sure is used to getting her way. I say she got Embry wrapped around her little finger more than once.
You're right about that. There's Kitson.
The cowboy was standing near the front door of the bunkhouse smoking a Quirly. He was a lean, fair-haired young man in his mid-20s, a little older than Faye. As Frank and Salty came up to him, he nodded to them.
We've got a job for you, Bill.
I generally get my orders from Mr. Embry, or Hal.
This one comes from Mr. Embry, and you can check with him about it if you want. Miss Embry is taking the wagon to town tomorrow, and Salty and I are riding along with her. You're coming along, too.
Faye, I mean, Miss Embry went along with that?
She did.
Well then, I reckon if she doesn't mind, I don't either.
The cowboy turned and went into the bunkhouse. Frank and Salty lingered outside.
Were we ever as young as him and Miss Faye, you reckon?
I'm not sure. I don't think I can remember back that far.